Listen up, Umi. This is a podcast with the most Ducker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host, We Are the Bell of All Souls podcast. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey, everybody.
Red Powell.
Hello.
And Adam Camilleri.
Hey, 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 hey. Play 40K every day.
Welcome to the show. This is a cool segment. I've got a great community spotlight segment to introduce here in just a minute with myself and Pleasant Kenobi talking about those Warhammer decks that are coming out in a few days.
Exciting.
Cool. Yeah, from Magic the Gathering, Universes Expanded, Unbound. I can't remember the exact name of it. We talk about it in there, but he actually just put up a video on his channel where he's got him and some people that are in various like awareness or skill levels of Magic playing the four commander decks. I can't wait.
Oh, man, I'm gonna watch that. Awesome. I'm getting the Necron one, guys.
Yeah, they're good. The good decks seem to have a lot of synergy. We'll talk about them on that segment. You first talk about them before, but I'm very excited. I love it when like the two worlds collide, kind of thing. It seems to be done well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm actually really excited about the deck.
You guys, though, I can't afford another expensive hobby.
Well, you.
What if I really like it?
You just have to get, if you got one of the decks, or get one of your buddies to get all four and just borrow one, because you don't really have to tinker with them. You can just play them as is.
Yeah. Well, then
best
there you
thing
go.
You can do as a Magic player is exploit someone else's Magic addiction.
I think I know someone.
Get in nice and close with somebody who's just got it all and just don't play their colors and you're good to go.
That's what's up. But the cool things about this, that what I've seen, all the videos I've seen and the previews and looking at the deck list, is that it really does look like they are right out of the box fun, and you've got a lot of different options within the deck based on who your commander, which creature you choose as your commander, and then just the randomness of Magic.
And it sounds like they're well balanced against each other, like internally, although some people are saying the Tyranid one is apparently possibly the strongest, but we'll wait and see. Proof Tyranids. Will be in the pudding. Never heard of him, just galaxy ending locusts. Get some bug spray, sort it out, guys. But which is something that Magic hasn't always been great at doing, a kind of commander set by commander set. Usually you'll find that there'll always be like one or two standouts. Me and my brothers, we actually bought one each during COVID, and we'd set up our webcams and play games against each other.
Oh, that's fun.
Play commander, which is really cool.
Now, this is actually, tell you what, let's just take a, we'll do that segment now. We'll take a just a couple of second break, come back with me and Pleasant Kenobi, and then we'll come back with the crew here in just a minute. Yeah, it's a fun segment. See you in a second.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, welcome to a community spotlight segment here on Forge the Narrative. I'm Paul, of course. I got Vince, otherwise known as Pleasant Kenobi on the internet. Vince, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me again. I think this might be our second or third time, I think.
Yeah, long-time listeners may know that you've been on the show a few times. I like to bring you in as almost like our Magic correspondent.
Absolutely. I mean, I have been known to play a little bit of Magic.
Well, you've also played Warhammer. I mean, like, you were at the London Grand Tournament this past weekend.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I am Warhammer's my second love. If anything, it's the one that I'm less burnt out on, because it's not my constant thing. So I'm a full-time Magic content creator. But I did take a little break from Warhammer recently because some of the new books were frustrating to play into. But I've just jumped back in with Sisters, and I was at the London GT. I only went 3-2, but it was fun. Good weekend. I do enjoy comp Warhammer. I do enjoy casual Warhammer too, but comp Warhammer does scratch an itch.
Yeah, I mean, you're not just to the London Grand Tournament. You frequent tournaments when it's, when your schedule allows, but, I've certainly seen you post pictures on your Twitter feed and the like of, you're in the hobby.
Yeah, absolutely. All over the place. I played, when new books come out, I get excited and try and spike tournaments. Did really well at Beachhead a little while back with Custodes when they were objectively broken. That was nice. Reddit thought they were bad. I thought they were good. I was correct, which is nice. But yeah, I do tournaments quite regularly. At the moment, I've not got another one in the schedule now, but I'm hoping to do a few more before the year's out, play the new demons and stuff. So yeah, I'm as deep into Warhammer as you can probably get at this point after about coming back to the hobby about 2.5 years ago.
We could probably have a whole episode about relationships with the hobbies and kind of, you can kind of float in and out, and it's kind of always here for you when you need it, and how you approach coming back into it. That's not the subject of this show, but I think that'd be something really cool for us to explore on a future episode.
Yeah, yeah, I'll be up for. I'm always up for talking about anything about Warhammer Magic, to be honest. Maybe a bit too much. Well, but you want to talk about the new product, right? The new exciting cards.
What's the full thing? What's the full name of it? It's Expanded Universe.
Yeah. So the official name, I think, is, if we go for the full like product name, it's Magic the Gathering Universes Beyond Warhammer 40,000 Commander Pre-Constructed Decks. Or you can just call them the 40K Commander Decks. But in addition to that, if people don't know, because I think that Wizards haven't advertised as much, there is three smaller collector things coming that are going to be shown off the next couple of days, maybe after this podcast goes out, which is a secret lair for Age of Sigmar, Blood Bowl, and Warhammer 40k Orcs. We don't know what's in those yet. So at time of recording, that 40k Orc thing could be a whole deck for all we know. We just don't know at this point in time. But we do know there's four Commander decks that you can play out of the box against each other.
I'm excited. I mean, we've talked a little bit about it on the previous shows where, you know, we've kind of gone over some of the ideas, the effects on the cards and how it's cool to see, you know, the Silent King with a profile that equates into Magic and how, you know, it fits in that Magic universe and how it may be different than how it applies in a 40K universe and whatever. But these decks are incredibly themed. Like, they seem to have a purpose. You've played with them, and I don't know what you can tell us yet, because they're not, by the time that we're recording this, they're not on the street yet.
No, but they are fully revealed. So we can talk everything and anything in great detail. So they come out in 3 days from when we record this following Friday. But the decks got fully spoiled about 2 weeks ago, because I got to do some of the spoilers as well. My gameplay video, so if you are interested in seeing them in action, you should go check out my YouTube channel. That'll be up by the time this is out, is me playing with three other people. Two very, very new players. Like, they've played all of about three games of Magic before that game. One of them is from the Warhammer community, Let's Make It Orky. She's a painter on Instagram and TikTok. And one quite established player as well, Spiffing Brit. But yeah, so it's all out there. So if you have questions or you want to talk about things, we can. Nothing is NDA'd except for those secret lairs, but I don't know what's in those either. That's a complete surprise.
Heck yeah, can't wait to see that. I will be checking it out because, you know, I'm a longtime Magic player and I've pre-ordered all these decks. Looking forward to getting them into. And I did want to talk about, you know, are these accessible for people that have never played Magic before? And my, I guess, parameters around even why I've been asking that question is we've seen a lot of the cards revealed and then people talking about the cards. And these seem to be, I don't want to say powerful, but, you know, they've got some spectacular effects that you can pull off within them. Are they approachable for new players?
Yeah, I'd say 80% yes and 20% no is probably how I'd go with it, because Magic is a complicated game, similar to Warhammer. So if you're trying to get into it for the first time, getting given a 100-card commander deck to play against three other 100-card commander decks, it's kind of like trying to play a 2,000-point game, like, immediately. It's probably not the best place to start straight away. Your first instance should probably be, like, the online digital client of Arena will teach you the ins and outs, or a smaller game with, like, one person to learn the basics. But beyond that, once you've got the basics down, things are great for new players. Like I said, two of the people that in my video were playing like their second or third games of Magic ever and just picked it up and rolled with it. We're having fun interacting, killing things, attacking with stuff. So absolutely. And then there is an argument that these decks are more powerful or more complicated than your normal pre-constructed deck. A pre-constructed deck is a deck you buy off the shelf and it works. So it's like buying a Battle Force or a Combat Patrol or something similar, one of the Christmas boxes perhaps, and then building it and playing with that. It's like that, except normally when you buy a pre-con, a commander or even non-commander ones, they're like those Battle Forces. You'd build them and play with them, but they wouldn't feel very cohesive. Normally out of the box, those armies aren't very good. These pre-cons are more in line with, like, they aren't like competitive decks because the format's not competitive. It's the multiplayer casual thing, but they're more in line with actually having full-on synergies and doing interesting things than pre-cons are known for. Yeah.
And that's, you know, I think that my view of the cards is that in any pre-con deck, like, I play with pre-cons with my youngest. We play Magic, is, you know, something to do. He gets the effects and we just kind of, he just plays the cards as it flips over. You know, he plays the cards in his hand, not necessarily worried about what's somewhere in his deck.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these cards are more complicated than your average Magic card, but the only reason I would say that is because they've gone very deep on making sure that each of the decks plays different to the other ones and have internal, not combos, but synergies that are interesting. Like, the Necron one is all about filling your graveyard, your discard pile, with creatures and artifacts, and then recurring them or looping them and doing cool things with them, which is innately a much, like, higher level thing than your normal pre-con would do. But it's still not that complicated once you know the basics of Magic. Or at least playing it a couple of times, you'll start to, if anything, these might be good inlays into the hobby or into the game, because They introduce you to things that sometimes other products have kind of steered away from or been a bit more careful with in terms of power level and stuff. But the themes of the decks, like that Necrob one, for example, are incredible, like in terms of like translating lore. They're translating lore more than they are game mechanics. So Zarek like goes looking for relics in his deck by milling. He's not actually, he doesn't do anything that's similar to the Silent King model in current 40k, which I think is a good way to go, because the Silent King's lore will probably be very similar next edition, where his rules could be fundamentally different. So they've erred away from representing one-for-one tabletop abilities and instead gone for flavorful things that fit canon and lore and Black Library instead.
Oh, that's really nice. What in line with getting folks like maybe to the table, or if they're looking to pick these up and want to know what can they even enjoy it, what are some baseline things that might help people kind of get off to the races once they crack these decks open?
The great thing about the four of them is that they've all been designed in an environment to play against each other. And in theory, although I've only played one game with all four of them at this point in time, they should be like balanced around each other as well. So if you were to buy a display case, which is one of each of the four, and sit down with three other Warhammer/Magic playing friends and play, then they should be relatively balanced. So that's a good on point there. In terms of needing to know what's going on, these are designed to be a multiplayer game. So four people at a table, and that format in itself, which is called Commander, is a lot like Beer and Pretzels Warhammer. So this is not... Technically, there are tournaments for Commander, but then we're getting into quite complicated stuff. Commander's not the tournament format. So we just joked about LGT and stuff like that. You don't go to the Magic equivalent of LGT and play Commander, usually, back in the day. COVID's changed things a little bit because it's much more of a casual environment now, and we're waiting for tournaments to come back. But my point is, this is the beer and pretzel, hang out with your friends. It doesn't really matter who wins. No one's really competing kind of format. It's not the one where you're cutthroat trying to win 9 rounds in one day sort of thing. It's not that. In case people are, haven't realized that, this is the multiplayer casual like party mode Magic in a way.
Oh, I like the sound of that. So it works even though it's 100 cards in the deck and each one of them is unique. I mean, outside of maybe some basic lands or whatever. You're doing this if you're even remotely familiar with how Magic and tapping of mana works and playing of cards, you're good to go with these.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the great things about Magic is once you know the fundamentals, there is an old adage that if you read the card, it explains the card. Now, in the modern power corrupt game, that isn't always the case. But with pre-cons like this and the cards and those, the vast majority of them will do just what they say on the tin. Even if what they do on the tin is confusing at first, like you might play a Necron card that turns all your things into artifacts. You're like, why is that good? Then you start to realize that's part of the synergy of the deck. Things being artifacts is good and so on and so on. But yeah, cards just do what they say. So that's why I think buying these decks and sitting down and immediately jumping in might feel lofty at first. That's why I think like the digital online tutorials and stuff are good. There's loads of good resources for learn to play as well. There's a great like learn to play Magic video on like Tulane Community College and stuff. But once you get the fundamentals under your belt, Magic kind of... The cards do what they say, which is a fundamental difference to Warhammer in many ways, because Warhammer you have to cross-reference data sheets and books and FAQs and stuff. That's very rare for Magic to need to do that.
And these decks are constructed in a way to where you don't have to add anything to them. You can buy them as just one deck. And if, let's say, you are the Tyranid/Genestealer enthusiast, you could get that deck and then that's all you need to play.
Absolutely. Like they are. So going back to the thing we said earlier about one of the potential barriers to new players is how complicated the decks are compared to normal pre-constructed decks you buy off the shelf. The other side of that, the flip side, is that these decks are actually more powerful than most pre-cons. So they're a much more fun play experience immediately because your cards do a lot more. They're not really basic. They can do interesting things. But beyond that, there's actually a discussion going on in the Magic community right now. People who are like what we call Vorthos, which is basically someone who's interested in the fluff. A Vorthos in Warhammer would be somebody who reads Black Library books like day in, day out. But they're talking about how they don't really want to break the decks apart because it breaks the cohesion of the theme of the deck, because they're very, very thematically on point. Like every single card in these decks, for those people who don't know, are Warhammer themed. So even the reprints of old... Yes, in art, in text, in flavor text. So every card, so even old cards. There's a card called Swords to Plowshares, my favorite example. It's an old removal spell. The theme is it sends a warrior off to be a farmer, right? From swords to plowshares. And the old art is a soldier going off into a field. In the Warhammer one, it shows a Leman Russ that's been recommissioned to be a tractor on an agri-world. And there's servitors like harvesting grain around it. And the flavor text it's something along the lines of, like, even within the Imperium, it's hunger and food is a resource for war, thus we must be dogmatic. It's like everything in there is Warhammer themed. So because of that, people are saying, actually, I don't really want to upgrade or change these. I kind of want to keep them cohesive and whole. And then people are saying, like, oh, well, I'm doing this. I'm sleeving up all four decks, keeping them in a box together. So it's almost like a board game you can crack out with friends who are into both things. Because then you're just playing that as a board game experience, as opposed to, you can edit them, of course. I'm going to do that as well. But you can play them as a self-contained, what we call a battle box, where it's four decks that were designed together, played together, and are thematically, flavorfully, aesthetically in line with each other as well.
I mean, and there are obviously some new cards and new effects, but there are some of those mechanics and effects from Magic's history that have been, you know, reskinned exactly like you were talking about to fit in with the
Yeah. Like Plowshares, like the lands and stuff. These decks have actually got the most new cards we've ever seen in a pre-constructed deck in the history of Magic. They've done 40 to 44 cards per deck that are new. And the main reason for that is creatures, because they couldn't really reskin. They can't just reskin a hill giant or a stone golem, right? None of that makes sense. So all the creatures, barring one across all four decks, are new ones. So you've got Pure Strain Gene Stealers, Marnius Khalgar's in there. Magnus the Red has an incredible card. Mortarion's card is unfortunately a little bit lackluster. Bellacor is insane. But all these things. There's Zephyrim from the Sisters of Battle. There's Arcoflagellants and Repentia, if you're into Sisters as well.
Some Space Marines. Stuff. You know, there's
So the upside for a lot of us was that it isn't all Space Marines. The Imperium deck is Forces of the Imperium. So there's Imperial Guard, Sisters, Space Marines in there, and Inquisition. And then further from that, the Imperial Guard get five different regiments shown. So it's like Krieg, Steel Legion, Cadians, Catachan, and Volstroy, or whatever they are. And then the Space Marines, it's mainly Ultramarines, but there's also, like, there's Grey Knights in there, there's two Blood Angels cards, there's
a Custodes card, which I've seen.
A Custodes. There's only one Custodes. But
it's a good one, right?
Weirdly, it's one of the best cards in the deck, so it's already pre-ordering for like $15 to $20. It gives your commander protection from everything when he's in play, protecting him, because obviously the Custodians, one of their functions is to guard, like, you know, important people like the Emperor, right? So when it enters the battlefield, and it can attack and block at the same time because it's vigilant, but when it enters the battlefield, it makes your commander, your warlord, immune to everything. So it's like the best bodyguard going, which is thematically cool, but it doesn't do what the Vexillus Praetor does on the tabletop. So you see what I mean? It's relying more on the canon than it is the mechanics of 40K to figure out what the cards do.
Can we talk briefly about the commander mechanic? I know we're talking about commander as a game type, and that is
called.
But the commander mechanic is that you have a legendary creature that in its summoning cost, you know, certain colors or what have you, determines what can form your deck. And if I understand this correctly, correct me if I'm wrong here, is that there are multiple options within the pre-constructed deck of cards that could represent your commander. So there is some difference in replayability outside of just shuffling and drawing and whatever. And the randomness comes with that.
So they normally do two to three face cards. This time around, we've got two per one. So what that means by face card is that's the commanders. So if we take the Tyranid deck, for example, the Swarm Lord is the face commander. He's on the front of the box. He is blue, red, and green are his colors, and everything in the deck has to be in the same color. So there's a blue, red, and green stuff in there. And there are other legendaries in there, like Old One Eye, the Red Terror, a named Kellamorph from the Kill Team box, last Kill Team edition. I can't remember his actual name, but he's a named one, and all this sort of stuff. But he's the face commander. He's the commander of the deck, and he sits in the command zone. He's your warlord, if you will, and you can play him at any time from your command zone. So you have to draw him. You always have access to him. The second one in there is a named Magus of the Gene Stealer cult. She's actually arguably better. She's more interesting to build around if you're going to customize the deck, because she improves. She buffs X spells that you can sink more mana into. A lot more complicated than Swarm Lord. Swarm Lord's just a big dumb guy who draws you cards and is very good at fighting. But yeah, there's two. So you can play several games with the Swarm Lord, then switch it to the Magus. And it's still good because a lot of cards in the deck are buffed by her buff to X spells thing. The other interesting thing about that Magus, if we're going to get into fluff here, Paul, is that it's the first named Magus from a Gene Stealer cult fiction. It's said by one of the Black Library authors that's been like a consultant on the product. So I wonder if that's a plant for the next edition's GSC book, because this is all built made in advance, right? I wonder if that's a plant. I was hoping we'd get a plant for Imperium. I thought it'd be wild if they revealed, like, the lion comes back, but he's got a card in Magic before we get a model. But I thought that GW would
never. I do not want to get too far off the speculation territory here, but it is cool.
But yeah, of course. But something like that would have been interesting. But instead of that, we got a named Magus, and we haven't got a named character in the GSC book yet, right? So that's interesting. That's interesting. The next Codex, we might get that character as a named character that is based upon this Magic card, and we saw it in Magic first because they did an Easter egg or a teaser for the future of 40K.
That'd be neat to link that stuff together. And I will say, I speaking of linking things, is that I consume some Magic content out there. It's where I first ran into your content. And it's cool to hear content creators that I've been watching over the years now talk about Warhammer a little bit, even if it is through the lens of Magic.
Absolutely. There's quite a few people who've been getting into Warhammer. Well, Warhammer really blew up during the pandemic for a lot of people, right? So there's a lot of creators that I know from different niches, from Magic and other card games and other media critic people and stuff like Cosmonaut Marcus, who all got super into Warhammer during lockdown. So there's a bit of that going on as well. But yeah, people are falling in love almost with some of the Warhammer stuff because they didn't know how cool it was. There's a big contingent of Magic players who are really into angels as an archetype. They just like the idea of angelic characters, and they collect them and play them a lot. And when Celestine got shown, people were like, who is this? Tell me everything I need to know about this character. And I thought that was wonderful to see people, like, you know, find a character that resonates with them in another hobby, and it's almost like a window or a door into it.
Yeah, that's so cool. I got a big grin on my face right now just thinking about this, the crossover stuff, and how, you know, it's neat to have this chocolate and the peanut butter type situation, you know, no matter which way you look at it, I think. And the more like crossover this kind of stuff is, it's like, I think as a, sometimes you feel very apprehensive about it, but when it's executed this well, it just melts all that away. And that's what it seems like we've got.
Yeah. I mean, for like full transparency, when they did their first crossover, which was Walking Dead, I think they picked the wrong one to start with. And I was vocally, there's some other issues with that product that we won't go into, but the fact that it was just Walking Dead out of nowhere, I was like, well, that doesn't feel even remotely Magic adjacent. It just feels like a random pop culture reference, right? When they then said Warhammer, and everyone just turns to me because I'm known to be the person in the Magic community who's in love with Warhammer, I was like, well, firstly, I'm biased because I love Warhammer, but secondly, I think it's more Magic adjacent because Magic has got a lot of like sci-fi elements to its fantasy, with like spaceships that move between worlds and robots and artificial life and stuff like that. So they are more adjacent. But like you said, even the other weird stuff, we've had Street Fighter now, we've had Stranger Things, we're having all this sort of stuff. When it's done well, and you see the love and the attention and care that's gone into it, to the point that, like I said, we might even have an Easter egg for the future of Warhammer's story in the Magic cards, which shows a lot of collaboration between Games Workshop and Wizards of the Coast. It does melt away the doubt, I guess. But the other like wonderful thing that attaches to that in a way is that I love card games, but normally new card games come, you get some cards, you play a bit, and they die, right? It's quite common that new card games never last. I knew people who played the Age of Sigmar like Conquest game or whatever it was, and that's like, you know, gone the way of the dinosaur. So in some ways, the crossovers within Magic, which is, I'm just going to say it, is the best card game system ever devised, and there's a reason it's so successful. You then get this like element where you can play other games within Magic, and you know they're not going to just be gone and dead within a year or two, because those cards are still playable. So like, I've got friends who tried to play the Game of Thrones living card game, and that's now dead at their local stores in England. But if there was a Game of Thrones crossover of Magic, those cards would still live on, and you could still play either in their self-contained environment, like we said about the Warhammer deck, like a battle box, or in the wider context of Magic. I think that's really cool to be able to play with like some of your favorite properties within that. Even if some Magic players are a little bit bitter that they feel like we're getting Fortnite-ified, where we're the crossover property now, but I don't really care.
Well, the coolest thing, you know, is that it's great for some folks, and I think it's going to at least, you know, help people, you know, have conversations about their hobby with folks that might not have been the easiest to approach before. Maybe we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Hopefully.
I'm excited about it, and it sounds like you are too.
Oh, I've kind of probably been a bit incessant and a bit annoying on socials and on my channel and stuff, because I've ignored a few other Magic products recently just to talk more about Warhammer, because I want to tell everyone about these characters, why they're doing this, what they're doing, how this links to the game. So I'm in love with it. I'll go as far as saying I'm blown away with how good it is, because I was still apprehensive even going into it loving Warhammer. I thought they could really mess this up. But then I sound like a shill, I guess, but I can't believe how much of a home run they've made. For people who don't know my content and who listen for the first time, like I am very openly critical about Wizards, quite explicitly. Like, one of my Warhammer videos comes out today, which is sponsored by them, but earlier today I put out a video mocking the latest product because it's just too expensive, because I think it's good to have both sides of the discussion. So I'm not normally such a positive shill, but I cannot get over how well they did. Like, the design team that worked on this product have knocked it out of the park. The art director is incredible. The new art is fantastic. Like, if you like 40k art, about 40% of the cards have brand new art that's been done by Magic artists, all of it being 40k themed though, and some of it's incredible. So yeah, I love it. I'm very excited. I can't wait to play with it.
Well, Vince, where can people find some of the content that you've been talking about, including the stuff that you like guest star on out there? List everything if you'd like. So people can get
So I stream regularly on twitch.tv/PleasantKenobi, but mainly the magic happens, as it were, at youtube.com/PleasantKenobi, where I make a ton of stuff, and there'll be a lot of things on this. So if you want to see me like unloading about the lore, getting some things wrong as well, I got the Steel Legion and Deathcore of Kraid mixed up, and that upset some people. You can find that all on YouTube. My podcast is one of the, in my opinion, one of the better magic podcasts, I guess, but I am also biased. That's Dice to Removal. If you just Google MTG Dies to Removal, you'll find it. That's on the Turing Community College podcast. And then I'm very active on Twitter as well, normally shouting about politics in the UK, Magic, or Warhammer, usually. So Pleasant Kenobi on Twitter is a good place to find me as well.
Awesome, Vince. Again, thank you very much for coming on and sharing your thoughts on this. The enthusiasm has really bled through. I was already excited, but I'm even more now. Cannot wait to get these decks in my hand and start turning some cards, taps some creatures. Paul. All right, thanks again, man. We'll see you soon.
No, that's perfect. Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
We are back. Got everybody here again. By the time y'all are hearing this, I will probably be doing commentary on the Warhammer Twitch stream for the Chicago US Open Series happening, I guess probably right now, actually, when you're hearing this.
Yeah, it's going to be a big weekend. Balance slate looming. We will see what happens following this event, but it's looking like we won't get any major changes beforehand. So we're going to have another sweet, beautiful GW open with this balance, this Nephilim unheard of balance, which we've been enjoying.
I'm not even looking at data slates. I'm looking at where I'm going to eat in Chicago.
Pizza?
What was the hot dog place you took me to?
Portillo's.
That was pretty good. I do right.
Yeah. So this place, this hotel is a little bit inside the city. It's at the Hilton Chicago downtown. And I don't think there's a Portillo's nearby, but I have found a couple of places I want to try to hit up. The Chicago, Burger Bar Chicago, and a place called Buddy Guy's Legends, which apparently has like live music after a certain period of time.
Sick.
And there's a place called Lou Malnati's Pizzeria.
Are they deep dish or are they?
I think it's deep dish. I've never been to any of these places I just said, but I've checked them out on the map. They seem to be within striking distance of the location, and I want to hit them up.
I ordered a deep dish to me and a couple of the other guys ordered a couple of deep dishes to our rooms at Adepticon, and I was not prepared. I will, a classic like thin crust pizza. I'll put away a large by myself, or like after about half, I'm satisfied. You know, I could stop there, but you don't. You eat the whole thing. But deep dish, two slices, and I was breathing heavily and wondering when I'd wake up. I was drifting away.
It's like a pizza pie, right? Chicago it's style
bread and cheese.
It's a casserole. I'm not trying to insult anybody out there, but it's a casserole.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
Them's fighting words for some people.
I understand what I'm saying, and I don't want to make anybody mad, but it's a thing. Like, okay, Adam and Red and Tanya, if you haven't had this, you know, we'll describe it here in a second. But what are y'all's thoughts, you know, versus like what would be a traditional pizza versus a deep dish pizza?
I feel like this isn't fair for me because I have watched a video about how they make deep dish pizza. So I would know what to expect, and I feel like one piece would be a challenge for me. But like a classic, when I think of like a classic pizza, it's like pepperoni, maybe salami, cheese. You get the supreme, maybe you get some like green peppers.
A couple of vegetables on a mushroom or two, maybe. I'm not a mushroom person.
I mean, I'm a classic ham and pineapple person because I'm Canadian and that's what we do up here. So.
Okay.
Got some feelings about that one.
keep them to yourself.
I don't. I think you should. You can put anything on a pizza and be fine. Like I'm not saying nothing is off limits as far as when you're topping your pizza or stuffing your pizza, as the case may be with these deep dishes.
I think of a pizza with minimal toppings. Like the best pizza I ever had was off a street vendor in Florence this one time when I was walking, just randomly walking around.
Like a margarita? Just a...
Yeah. Yeah. It was literally...
A basil leaf and some oil.
Basil, mozzarella, pomodoro sauce or whatever you guys call it over there. And just on a thing. And it's just one degree lower than scalding your face heat. Mm-hmm. And bang, it's just the best. It is the best. So good. But even if you haven't toppings, like minimal, like I don't want the whole thing covered. I want little bits and pieces.
You got any opinions on this, Red?
I mean, man, I love me some food, but when it comes down to this and like deep dish, I mean, I've gone out of my way to get it. And I can tell you the few times that I've actually tried to get it outside of certain areas and then not been able to get it because a lot of cases, I think, you know, like even Pizza Hut tried to do it. I know that's just not the same. I get it. It's fast food. Barely. But like they like sold out immediately as soon as they started offering it. Didn't even make it. Like I couldn't even get it. So it's just that desirable. And it really is. Like you're really committing to far more than just pizza with this thing. It's a real deal. And so for those that don't know what they're getting into, it is a real commitment of a meal. I definitely will stop. It's one of those things that if I see it on a menu, it's worth trying. But I have to have plenty of space for it too, because that's not something that I can just like idly approach. Even like, yeah, I'll just have a slice. That's still, it's a meal unto itself.
But do you have a preference, deep dish versus?
So like, I've never really, I kind of get the thin crust approach for some people. I mean, it is, you know, it's kind of like the you know, like a step up from pita and, you know, pizza and where that goes. But no, I mean, I think the deep dish really is the next level gourmet approach to pizza. I'm a big fan. If you haven't had it before, like, you know, again, like Pizza Hut and other companies have like stuffed crust. I like those and whatnot, but at the same time, there are people who have, you can get those at restaurants and that's really good. But I think that goes to the next level where deep dish, it's like the whole thing, the whole layer and whatnot. So like, mm-hmm. Sure. I'm all for it, but it's also, again, like sometimes when it's on the menu, it's like, I don't know if I could handle that right now. So it's not something I can jump for all the time.
Over the course of this conversation, I found a place called Devil Dogs that might be a contender also. So you know,
there you go.
I got my work cut out for me.
Sounds like it.
As far as this goes. But that's for the U.S. Open Series in Chicago. But there's two other events, Kansas City and then the finale, which is not just a 40K tournament or 40K and Age of Sigmar tournament this time. It's going to be like something that people can travel to. And there's also a narrative event happening at the finale in New Mexico.
Yeah, man. I mean, don't get me wrong. Between Chicago and Kansas City, they all sound really great. But I have to say, like, I like the different spots that GW has picked for some of these. I mean, you know, I've always appreciated the circuits and where they've gone when it goes cross country. I wish that I had, you know, still been stationed with the Army in Leavenworth, which is close to Kansas City, and I could have gotten back there. But cars weren't in it for Kansas City. But I'll tell you what, I'm definitely going to the grand narrative event in Albuquerque. I'm extremely excited for that.
What you gonna bring?
So I've committed. I'm you know, they actually, you can choose your faction as you sign up for it, and I've chosen Imperium. And I'm getting Gaunt's Ghost back on the table.
Yeah.
Approach. I know. I mean, give it up, right? Like it's, I'm really excited with the narrative approach. I don't feel like I need to min-max. I don't feel like I need to like crush into a certain specific direction. I can play the army as I've built it. I can add in my homebrewed Inquisitor and his retinue and everything. I'm really excited. I'm really looking forward to it.
Do you know what have you gotten any of the information on the event yet?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I read into the rules. It's really good. I mean, you can go to Eventbrite, you can look at the rules. They actually have the like kind of the mission packet kind of deal. And it's not really a mission packet. It lays out the groundwork for the narrative. And I'm really excited. Really, really excited.
That's awesome. I'm glad you can make it, because it's going to be fun to hang out. Especially the finale is in a full-on resort.
Yeah, yeah.
In a scenic location, like a place to hang out. Like a place you would want to go to, even if there wasn't 40K involved.
Right.
But there is 40K involved.
It's gonna be a good time. The last finale was at the Citadel in Grapevine, mm-hmm. right outside of Dallas, and that was a blast. And this is gonna be like several magnitudes cooler than that.
Impossible.
Well, we'll see. But we got two events to get to before we get to that. So coming up pretty soon, right on the heels of Chicago, is Kansas City, and then in November to close out the season in New Mexico. Very much looking forward.
Cool time, man. I'm really interested to see where they take the kind of road train of 40K events next year, G-Dub. Will they expand?
You mean the land train?
The chunk. Yes. Oh, I was building towards the segue.
I ruined it.
No, you did. You got it. You got what I was putting down. You picked it up. It's perfect.
Just y'all wait. It's going to get It's gonna get awesome.
Fantastic.
Speaking of getting awesome and land trains, there was some, I mean, I know we talked a bit about the Leagues of OTAN and the impact and ripples that, you know, we were expecting them to make. And, you know, before too much steam could get picked up, there was already an errata, a balance. Balance, we don't know if it's balanced yet or not, because it's not in everyone's hands. The miniatures aren't out yet for everybody. But some changes were made.
They seem to be divisive in the community, these changes.
I will say this. I think it came at a good time because, you know, granted, there's already people, I got the box set, I thought it was going to be amazing. Well, the miniatures are amazing, and you should be playing armies that you like and getting armies that you like the look of. If you're, you know, if you're a longtime player and you're getting into something just because of the power of it, you know, it's not the way, you know, it's not the way it works too much, you know, around here. But I think it was at a good time before a large chunk of the, because the, technically these pre-release box sets are, you know, just a teaser. It's several weeks before you'll see any of the other figures. Most tournaments don't allow the codex if it's not in wide release in events yet. You know, even if there were, let's say all the models were out. So it was a good time to make some changes before people could go quote unquote all in.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's much better to do it now while things are still fresh, and in their own words, while, you know, you can design your collection and purchase your models with confidence, knowing what you'll be getting in the long term. Way better now than a month, 6 weeks from now, when everyone's got their what they think is a 2,000 point list ready to go. You know, they've finished painting things, and then things get priced out, or points get changed, and you can't use whole units anymore. It would have been way worse. And sorry, that's what they've done most of the time up until this point. So I think this is a phenomenal step in the right direction.
It is one of the situations to where it's tough, because I'm kind of one of those like play the ball where it lands type players. And so I kind of, you know, I'm already thinking about ways to interact with the army. But at the same time, you know, the rules designers get to have, you know, their eye on things. They know how they want things to play out. And if it's not playing out how they want it to play out, then we have a mechanism, thankfully, to adjust that, and we have a lot of levers that can be pulled within our game, which is one of the coolest things about our game. And they opted to pull some of those levers, and, you know, great.
I sort of look at this from a different perspective, so I actually think how they handled it was really good. And I look at it from the perspective of somebody who really struggles to learn rules. For me, if it was my new army and I got my new codex and they had changed a lot of the rules to bring it into sort of compliance with where the meta is at right now, I would find that really frustrating if I didn't know to go look for a FAQ right away, because it takes so much energy and devotion to learn those rules that I actually think that doing most of the balance in the points instead, for me, that is a more like agreeable solution, because the majority of my book is going to still be correct when I get it. And I don't know, for me, that's just, it's a more elegant solution.
I think that's important, you know, the elegant solution piece, because you hit on, as game designers, as they're trying to develop this construct and they're trying to make these different mechanisms, and they want to make a unique faction. They want to make something that people want to play. They want to do all sorts of stuff, but at the same time, they got to be really careful, because it could tip it one way or the other. And don't get me wrong, there is something to play testing and how it goes into development, but you also, I mean, look at the company and the leaks that they've had previously and all the efforts that you go through, and can you trust play testers to get a product out and delivered as you want to? Can you do all these different things? It's really important in how they go about this. Delivery was everything. And it's hard to hold it against them in certain regards, not knowing all the circumstances. And then also I can appreciate with game designers and what they've tried to accomplish that they did come back. And with, as you said, Tanya, you know, elegant solution, the ability to come in and actually insert in some adjustments that they think might have put it more where they intended it to be versus where maybe the greater audience thought it was going to land one way or the other. And so I can appreciate them making a change. I think that it was a good, there's never going to be a good timing to adjust certain things one way or the other. Different sides of it were going to come at it with their own positions. And I really think that they went into it well. I liked how they delivered it. I liked how they approached it. I liked what they did with the James Workshop thing.
Yeah.
That was clever.
Right? Like, yeah, it was very clever. It was very, it was good. And I can appreciate their engagement and the rate at which they're doing this. And I'm for it. I'm glad to see that they've gone the direction they have, and I look forward to seeing what they continue to develop.
So I'd say.
And I'm still over here painting some Votann. This is like, it hasn't, I mean, it's still cool models. It's a brand new faction. There's neat stuff. Like, it's the world. It's gonna be all right.
Anybody who thinks it was a death knell to the faction is, I'm sorry, completely incorrect. It's far too early to say that. And secondly, the full range hasn't even been released yet. I'm of the opinion that we've probably possibly got even more Votann coming in the future. Even if this isn't great for them right now, this is a well fleshed out, supported faction that's going to go through various iterations over years. Even if you don't love what they look like right now, but you like the models, jump on them. They'll be playable in a way that brings you joy at some point. They will spark joy, I promise.
If you've been a fan of the faction, or you want to get in on the faction, I mean, it's sometimes just cool to have new models and, you know, whatever. I think it is interesting the way that they've applied this, but, you know, at the same time, again, all those levers are there in our game. Our game is dynamic to support that. And, you know, sometimes it's cool to see it in action. So there we go. I want to point out also, yellow is still very hard to paint. It's not actually to get it the way you want, but it's like, now it's refining it. You know, it's, you have to be, it's a little less forgiving still than, you know, red.
Mm.
A lot of red there, huh, Paul?
Red is not very forgiving, as many listeners will know. Long memory.
Wait, red the color or red the person?
Yes.
That's not very forgiving.
Oh, I want to talk about Echoes of Eternity so bad.
Oh, sorry. I am very close to finished, so hold fire. Maybe next week.
No, I can't talk about it because it is so good. I don't want to spoil a moment, a second, a word, a syllable, a paragraph, anything.
I will say this is the most I've enjoyed Sanguinius so far.
Dang.
I love you and Peter at the same time.
Fish in a barrel, Paul. Love it.
But I will say several chapters of this are almost like a Primarch novel.
Yes, correct.
And I don't hate it. You can infer from that, I should say. That's putting it extremely mild. I'm just trying to not spoil anything.
Like, this is a really, I believe it will stand apart from previous Heresy books when it's all said and done. Because you're right, this is kind of a Primarch novel. It's kind of a regular little bit of Boltapawn, but it's also setting the final stage for the dramatic events that are about to unfold in the last book, which is, you know, looming right now.
I think it's a defining book. Like, this book, if you're a fan of Warhammer, you will be a fan of this book.
It's got it all. And also what you said last week about Amit being about 100%. I had no idea who that guy was, and now he's a favorite of mine.
Dang.
He's phenomenal.
Yep. Who wrote this book?
Aaron Dibski Bowden.
Okay.
I will say, I have the utmost respect for, you know, all the people that have been contributing to this body of work that is the Horus Heresy. And Dan Abbott's been on the show. He is amazing to talk to listen to, and to read, but he better watch his ass. Aaron Dibski Bowden is coming for him.
He's coming for that title. Paul's favorite.
Love it.
I mean, it is a situation to where this book does not hold anything back. And
all you got to do to appease Paul's favorite is to write Blood Angels with reverence and make them cool. And bam, new favorite. Achievement unlocked.
I mean, you're not completely wrong. I'll tell you that. Yeah, but this is very well done. You're kind of hanging on every word, and it's building towards something. And this is a point where, you know, we all know how this ends. We know where the story, you know, in our lore ends. And leading up to it, this is just building. And the anticipation never breaks in this book. So, you know, take that for what it is. If you haven't gotten there in the series yet, if you're struggling with any parts of the series, it's worth it. Push through. Get to this.
Push through all 50-something books to get
well,
here.
I mean, like the Siege of Terra. If you've made it to the Siege of Terra, yeah, or you just happen to start with the Siege of Terra, and any portion of that, you know, is you're finding to be a bit of a chore, you haven't gotten back to, you think you'll get there when you get there, you want to get caught up to Echoes of Eternity.
My fear, you know how there's FOMO? Well, is there an acronym for the fear of spoilers?
There has to be. That's why I'm trying to dance around all this stuff.
One of the reasons I started reading the Siege of Terra rather than reading the probably three or four heresy books that I had next lodged. I think one of them was Slaves to Darkness, which I hear is one of the phenomenal ones. I was about to start reading that. Then, I think the second or third book of the Heresy came out, and I'm like, I've got to get on this. Otherwise, it's going to get to the end. One person's going to say one sentence to me, and it's going to ruin the whole thing. Like, you know, someone says, oh, it's not the Emperor on the Golden Throne of Taurus or some kind of, like, oh my God, I'm going to kill you. And then, you know, I go to jail, you know? literally, I'm jumping onto it now to save myself and hopefully save somebody else down the track. You know, it's very altruistic of me, yeah, to read these novels.
So I just want to give you like the most epic spoiler stories. It's not any spoilers, but so my husband went his entire life, one, without watching Fight Club, wow, and two, nobody had spoiled it for him.
Wow.
Right? Right, so like good. I'm watching the movie with him for the first time, and he's like, wow, I didn't see that coming. I was like, nobody told you? He's like, no.
Well, good on you for not telling him either. Like, you know, this is this and this, you know. It's a
part of me wants to throw some shade and say your brother needs some cooler friends, but I think that's pretty cool.
And I'm watching it. I'm actually shocked I didn't spoil it too, because like every other time you watch it, you like sort of point out the person. Now I'm trying not to do spoilers, but you like point out the person when you watch it the second time, right? And yeah, I didn't say anything. I was so proud of myself. Well, pat myself on the back.
Yeah, it's good. Oh, well, good. I look, don't want to keep talking about it because I'm sure something will come out, but it's just, again, if you have not gotten there yet, or just start there, you know, just start there.
Push your way backwards.
Just read Echoes of Eternity. And, you know, there's two more books coming in the series.
Is there two more after this?
Yeah.
Oh, really? I thought there was only one more.
I thought there were two more.
The next book is in two parts.
They're going to Deathly Hallows that bad boy.
So there's more stuff coming. It's not the end of the series. There's definitely a cliffhanger, you know, at the end of this. And
have they told us, are they going to do the scouring after this? Are they going to do a series for it?
I don't know.
The only thing after this we have is also ADB, where his, you know, Black Legion stuff, which is great. I actually enjoyed that way more than I thought I was going to.
It is amazing.
I love it.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Had a buddy who, we may have said this on a couple of shows ago, I have a buddy who's, I mean, longtime friend, you know, known him since or very early in high school, and he's like trying to get back into the game, and he's like, yo, I want to do Black Legion, where can I start, what can I do, you know, how can I build an army that, you know, doesn't necessarily revolve around one particular concept or another. I'm like, man, just read these two books right here and you'll find the concept. Like,
you know what? So when people come to me and they're like, I really want to start learning how to play Warhammer, but I just can't pick between this faction and this faction, I always tell them to like either read a book or listen to an audiobook that mains each of the factions, because I feel like once you sort of get an idea for how they are in lore, you'll like find the one that speaks to you. And I don't know, for me, it's important to sort of have an idea of the feeling of the faction in the 40K universe. So if you are a person who's kind of like stuck between two different factions, maybe if you're thinking about Blood Angels, maybe read Echoes of Eternity. It might just push you over the edge a little bit and you'll be like, I'm all in on that Mephiston red.
Speaking never of pushing back. Over the edge.
Oh man, I can't wait to have this. You know, Rev, we have to talk as soon as you get there. So,
I look forward to it.
It's going to be amazing. I can't wait for that conversation. Some of y'all know why. But that's it. We can't talk about it anymore. I don't want to say anything. I said too much already.
You did.
But
you had to edit it out.
Yeah. But with this, God, it does not disappoint. It has, you know, it got me jazzed to play more Heresy and also to, you know, do some building and cannot wait. I'm literally perched waiting on the next installment of this series. And you know that Admin's going to knock it out of the park.
Yes. There's I think I mentioned this on the show before, but apparently there was a super meeting of all the listed authors for the Siege of Terror before they all started working on their mm-hmm. projects or their whatnot. And I just want to be in that meeting. I want to be a fly on the wall in that meeting when they defined the linear path they were going to take through this narrative. They defined all the twists and turns. Who's got the plot armor in this one? Who needs to, you know, possibly get harmed in this one? Who's going to die? Who's going to live? I hope they record it. Like, or maybe they're crazy and they recorded it and they're going to release like a special edition Heresy planning meeting where we just get to sit and be like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god.
That would be cool.
Extra DVD of special features. Yeah.
That would be very cool. Oh.
Make it so.
That's that. I know, you know, it changes Votann. Great novels coming out, tournaments coming up, finale coming up, getting towards the end of the year. You know, it feels like we just blinked, we turn around here in October.
Yep.
I feel like I just got back from the States and I've been back for over 5 months. It's
oh, really?
It's nuts. Yeah.
Holy.
I guess we should be like talking about, you know, what's everybody working on? Like, anybody got any tournaments coming up that they're going to? I mean, I know you got the narrative happening, but do you have to build anything for your army for that? Or are you ready to rock?
So I don't have to build too much. I think there's a couple of things I want to play around with. I do think, like, again, narrative aspect, there's a couple vehicles I want to look at, especially with some of the changes with tanks and all. I think I would be doing myself a disservice by not bringing a tank. And so that could be fun. What I really want to do, honestly, is I kind of want to do some stuff leading up to it, like with Crusade, like narrative elements. And I kind of want to build my force a little bit before I go into it so I can have like some narrative background and story to like that actually game sponsored before I step into this narrative event.
Me personally, I painted like 700 points of orcs or something stupid last month. So I'm just going to coast for a little bit.
Just be like, cool. Can play with this now. All right. Works.
Yeah. Like I painted. So now it's Orktober. So now I can actually play with my orcs.
Oh, that's right. We're recording this on the 4th. We're officially in October. We should arrange some more content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, baby. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I think I've officially completed my Dark Angels for now.
I was going to say, are you ever really finished?
No, I just finished painting 9 attack bikes, magnetized for heavy bolter or multi-melter. So they're done. That's it. Done. And now I'm painting, I think, a Phobos librarian. And I can't think of anything I need to paint after that. So I've actually started planning out my Night Army. And I'm doing it, I'm taking it really seriously. I've got a Google Doc where I'm compiling the recipe of all the paint options. And then I'm going to start testing the paints I want to try for the scheme and then knocking them off and putting in the ones I want. I got a whole spreadsheet going for this thing. I'm sourcing some 3D printed bits. I'm thinking I want to have all my warglaives have a breacher shield and just actually pose them to be shielded up, like with their. So I'm going down a big old rabbit hole. I might be getting some custom decals done as well, because I can't. I'm not confident enough in my freehand abilities to paint
manticles. Knights are pretty much a canvas. You can do all kind of crazy stuff with them. That sounds cool.
That's right. I'm going to test out a bunch of new painting techniques. Like I'm going to go really down the whole of pin washing, weathering, chipping, all that stuff, sponging. I'm really excited, but I'm like taking my time. I've been painting Dark Angels for like 3.5 years straight. So I'm taking a couple of weeks off and just planning out this whole recipe, this whole thing that I'm going to start painting, get a shoulder pad or two done of the test, get all the paints and the whole recipe sorted out and flowing and beautiful, and then just going to smash them out, man. I'm wanting to do the thing I'm struggling with the most right now is the basing. So the night world that these guys are from is called Darkhaven, and it's like Brothers Grimm. Like it's actually very similar to Caliban. Like it's old fairy tale, dark night.
Really getting out of your comfort zone.
I know, that's why I'm doing them, because they're Dark Age. But my Dark Age are on like a sandy kind of wasteland base, and so I want these guys to be dark, foresty. Like I want like pine needles and pine cones on the bases and stuff. I want little, you know, funguses. I want some like fallen trees and like moss and stuff. Like that's the vision I have in my head. I'm really struggling to try and figure out how to bring that to life. So if anybody has any ideas, chuck them up in the chat.
Do y'all have pine trees down there?
We do. I mean, they're not native. They're here because they're in plantations, because they're for, you know, for pine, for building stuffs.
Just checking.
Just checking. Yeah.
I've never been down there. I don't know what's over there. I'd love to see this for myself one day.
You should, definitely. I mean, G-Dub should obviously do a final in Australia, right? And they should all come down.
Let's say it won't be the World Open series.
Yeah.
Come do some jibber jabber.
It'll just be like the World Series of Baseball, where it's just entirely
in the U.S.
It's still in the U.S.
There's a Canadian team. There might be two Canadian teams. I can't remember if there's...
Do the Expos still exist?
I don't think so.
Then what would the other Canadian team be?
The Blue Jays?
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. This is the wrong crowd to be having this discussion with, by the way. I'm sure someone out there listening is immediately figuring out that we don't know international baseball.
But like, there's another board meeting I would like to have sat on. The discussion for what do we name the... you know, series, this American League for baseball, and then somebody just slamming the table and saying it's the World Series, damn it. And they're like, there's no other countries involved. And he says, shut up. Yeah, kick that man out of here. Security, eject this man. It's the World Series for baseball.
You got no vision.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is hilarious. Well, we've been pretty just Warhammer adjacent in this episode, which I think is fun to ever do every now and then.
It's a palate cleanser.
If you do need Warhammer content, make sure to hit us up. You know, come and check us out, the live stream from the Chicago Open this weekend. It's going to be amazing. Make sure you check out Thursday's show, where we're going to be talking about tournaments. By the time you hear this, you've already missed this week's, but, you know, next week's we do it live. And Tanya, you've still been doing you actually just started up the series again with Skari on his, what's the name of it? The Friday engagements.
Yeah, so we call it Just Put Paint on It, and it's every Friday at 12 p.m. Eastern, and we just sit down and put paint on models, and we have a guest, and we chat and just have a lot of fun, and that is on YouTube.com/C/ScarredCast.
I've been invited to come on the 21st.
Are you gonna be painting some Mephiston red?
Probably not. I don't even know where I need to. I've changed my hobby area around since the last time I was on. I now have a desk that's separate that is not conducive for my laptop. So maybe I'll set up. I don't know. I've got hobby problems over here to solve between now and the 21st.
You got time.
But we'll see. Probably painting some Votan. We'll see. We'll see what's up. I just like the models. I think there's a cool challenge as far as the stuff goes. They have a lot of textures on them. You know, some. I like to point out that the idea that the Leagues of Votan existing in deep space and them having a lot of leather on their stuff implies that there are space cows.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah.
You sure they don't just salvage it off of the things that they salvage out there?
I don't like the fact that you're tearing down my dream that there are also now space stakes.
What if it's just orcs?
That would be vegetarian, wouldn't it?
Well, they're not exactly vegetable. They're a fungi.
Oh, there you go.
They're real fungi.
Well, oh, hilarious.
Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Strength to strength, guys. Strength to strength.
That's what we do around here. I guess we'll go ahead and wrap it up. I appreciate everybody's time hanging out. It was a pleasure talking with Vince earlier on the show. Really looking forward to the Magic decks. Yeah, like playing. We are going to do something all together, even if it is, and we have to wait until Vegas before we're all together again. Commander seems like a pretty good idea of what to do. And then check us out on the stuff that we're doing. We'll see y'all next week.
See ya.
Bye, everybody.
What they said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.